Welcome to the Friday Night Life Podcast with your hosts and veteran high school football coaching couple, Chris and Kareen Stevens. Whether you're in your first year or 50th year of coaching, you are in for a positive and uplifting experience. It's time to huddle up and get an all-access pass to the lives of coaches, their spouses, and their crazy Friday Night Lives. And now let's kick it off with your hosts, Chris and Kareen Stevens.
Thank you for downloading and listening to this episode. We have a great one for you, but before we get into this episode, we want to ask if you can please take a moment and subscribe to our podcast.
Yes, and while you're at it, how about a 5-star rating and review too? These actions will help us to broaden our TFNL audience as we share each of these amazing stories with all of you.
And also, please spread the word and share this podcast with your family and friends.
Do you know of a coach or a coaching couple that would be great for our podcast? Or would you like to get in touch with us?
Please send us an email at thefridaynightlife@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at the FNL Podcast and on Instagram and Facebook at The Friday Night Life. We would like to introduce to you all Dallas and Becca Hartwell. Dallas is originally from Nebraska and served in our United States Army from August of 2005 until January of 2012. He participated in escort and security missions in Operation Enduring Freedom. He also worked for the railroad company as a plumber before pursuing a career in education and coaching. His wife, Becca, is from Costa Rica originally, and wouldn't you believe it, she's never watched a football game until they met. They moved up to Alberta, Canada, where Becca pursued her doctorate degree, and Dallas got introduced to Canadian football. They moved back to California in 2017, where now Dallas is currently the head football coach at Terra Linda High School. And Becca continues to serve as an infant gut microbial ecologist and science communicator. Thanks again for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, Dallas and Becca Hartwell.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. Thank you so much for coming on. Rebecca, it's good to meet you. Looking at your resume, oh my gosh, you are a rock star. Okay, so we're going to just, Coach, you can sit there for a minute. We're going to talk. Just kidding. You are awesome. So can you tell us really quick, like, what do you do as, I mean, I know you are a microbiologist scientist, but where do you work?
So yeah, I'm a microbiologist, infant gut microbiologist more specifically. I work at a small spin-off company of UC Davis, so we're located in Davis. So we're a microbiome company. I study everything that has to do with how the baby's gut microbiome, which are the bacteria that live in their guts, how that develops and how that relates with their immune health. The company started because researchers at UC Davis discovered that infants were missing one very important bacteria that helps them digest human milk. So what our mission for our company is to put that bacteria back in all the babies. So we work with NICUs and pediatricians trying to get all moms and all NEOs and pediatricians putting that bacteria back into the babies.
Oh, very cool. Well, that's kind of cool. That hits close to home for us because I don't know if you are aware, but we have triplets. So we were in the NICU and kind of know a little bit about that. So, well, they're 11 now. Yeah. So they're 11. So yeah, we got through. I feel like we're in a sweet spot. You know, it's just like, I would just love for them to be this age forever because they're independent, but they're still fun. I mean, you don't have a lot of the two, you know, we're fifth grade. So it's like two more years and we're going to be right into that, like puberty, like attitude and we hate you mom and dad. And so we're just like, we're in a good spot right now. And I want to freeze time. I could just stay this way forever. Yeah. But
How did you survive with three toddlers? How did
that happen? Strong village, coach.
Oh yeah.
Strong village. Yeah. When they were born, we live in Chino, and her parents at the time were living in Ontario, which is right next door, the city right next door. And then my parents were in Chino. So for the first 6 weeks, 24-hour, round the clock, her mother, my mother, her mother, my mother, and just rotating. That gives us the third set of hands for, just kind of the holding, the feeding, the changing, and then she was just the feeder. She was the, you know, she was like, okay, Chloe, your turn, feed. And then her mom or my mom would hold the other two with me while she fed. Yeah. And
my father-in-law nicknamed me Dairy Queen. Because yeah. I nursed. Well, I tried to.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I nursed for 4 months.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, I got mastitis, I think, 4 times. Mm-hmm. And I was like, at some point, I'm like, and it was my mom and my mother-in-law sat me down and said, listen, yeah, great. Kudos to you. You made it this far. Like, there's just, you need to do formula because your body is wearing down. And, you know, when you're, because you know how they say when you have mastitis, it's better to keep having them nurse on you to get rid of it. But at some point, it probably isn't even good for the babies to be constantly nursing on that. So it was, it was hard for me because I think in my mind, I just wanted to do it. But hey, you know.
Right. No, that's amazing. That's,
yeah.
Three babies for 4 months. Yeah, that's amazing.
So, right.
Good to see you. That's a year. You multiply. So.
That's right. And then we've got, you know, people like you that put great nutrients into these formulas. You're doing your research. And so I knew, I'm like,
thank you for doing that.
Yeah. At the end of the day, they're healthy. And I know that they're getting what they need. And God knew. So, yeah.
But, well, we made it. They're happy, healthy, yes. 30 fingers, 30 toes at 11. So somehow we got out of it. You know, made it.
Kind of.
How old is Alice?
Alex turned 2 in December, so she'll be 2 and 3 months.
She'll be 2 and 3 months. Okay. All right.
Going on 13 now.
So we started the, I don't know. I don't want to call them terrible twos. That's not the right word. I know. You know, right?
It is. Yeah. I think it is pretty terrible.
Is she in that mode? Is she kind of like showing her wit and her will? And
she's kind of like that in between, and in which she still wants to be a baby, but she wants to be independent. So it's really contradicting. And she gets really upset when she can't do something. And we try to help her. She just gets really frustrated because she just wants to do it. So trying to navigate that sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. We had that. They were 3. So the kids were 3. Twos, they were fine. They were angels. When they turned 3... the switch flipped and it was on. It was like, we're going to show you. Yeah. There's 3 of us, you know.
I don't know why. And, you know, I know I read books that said that they tend to team up, which obviously they kind of feed off of each other.
Yeah.
But I think part of it was because I was trying to potty train and I had no idea what I was doing. So it was a nightmare. So I think I potty trained for like 6 months because I just didn't know what I was doing. And so it was like, I would say, wake up in the morning, be like, okay, we're going to do it today. And then I'd go for a week. And then I was like, we're getting nowhere, poop and pee everywhere, retrag diapers. We'll start again, like in a few weeks. And so I think that was part of the reason why it was terrible threes for us, because we were potty training and my son just wasn't having it. So we got there. They're potty trained. Praise God.
Two girls and 1 boy?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That even makes it even harder because, you know, there's different ways to go potty. You know, it gets confusing.
Right. We just let our boy go out in the backyard and just go in the grass.
I did.
I did.
I, after a while, it was like, you know, because people said, well, you know, maybe wait till it gets warmer, like spring, and then, you know, they could just kind of go outside and play, and then you could put the porta potties out, like the little tiny, not porta potties, but the little, you know,
tubs,
training toilets. I can't remember what they're called. But we just put them out there, and then they said they can go and do what they need to do, and it was horrible. Like, I'm so glad we're done. So anyway, yeah. Anyway, tales of the triplets is what we call them. So.
Yes. And we're going to get right into it. So I would love to hear, Becca, you grew up in Costa Rica, and just kind of tell us a little bit about that and what life was like growing up in Costa Rica before you came to the States.
Yeah. What I can tell you about growing up in Costa Rica, it's quite different. You know, we obviously don't have the seasons, whether either it rains or it doesn't. You have, you know, all the nature available to you. You can go to the mountains, you can go to the beach. Everything is just about an hour drive. But as a kid, you just don't appreciate that. Like, I just kind of took it for granted. We went to the beach and it was just like any other day. So now that I don't live there and I just go back as a tourist, I get to appreciate it more. Like, I go to the beach and I actually reminisce of you know, just how lucky it is that I am there and how beautiful it is. And we go to the national parks, which I never visited before when I lived there. I look back at, like, I lived maybe an hour away from, like, one of the most prominent places for surfing, and I never learned how to surf. And now as a 30-year-old, I'm like, I wish I knew how to surf, you know? So just things like that. You know, when you're just surrounded by that beauty, you kind of take it for granted, everything. Mm. But it's quite different. People are really warm. You kind of show up to someone's house unannounced, and they will bring you in, give you coffee. You know, everyone will invite you to a cup of coffee, give you some food. But yeah, you know, it's very different. But I think I enjoy it a lot more now that I don't live there, and I get to go back as a tourist with limited time and just get all the juice out of it.
Yeah.
And when did you and your family move over to the States? I should say, I know you came to Nebraska, but did you move here first and live here for a while before that?
So my mom, she went to college in North Carolina. So she lived there for a while, but then she moved back to Costa Rica when she got me. She wanted me to grow up in Costa Rica. So as a kid, I visited quite a bit, the States. My aunt lived in Miami, so I went maybe once, twice a year, but I never lived here. I moved by myself after I finished my bachelor's degree to start my master's degree. Mm.
Okay.
Very cool.
Awesome.
Wow.
So you had a lot of connections in Florida, kind of from Costa Rica. What brought you to the Midwest?
From tropical
and honestly, Coach, no offense. I just, you know, it's I'm curious.
People ask me that all the time. How did you end up? And you know, the first time that I heard about Nebraska, I actually have to look it up in a map. I have no idea where it was. I went to when I was doing my bachelor's in nutrition, I went to a course on food safety. And it was imparted by the University of Nebraska in agreement with the university, the National University in Costa Rica. So during lunchtime, I stayed, and one of the instructors, he was taking Spanish classes, and he was really eager to speak Spanish, and he didn't do a really good job at it. So I spoke back to him in English, and he went, "Oh, you have a really good, you know, like, you speak English really well, you know, here and there." So we started chatting, and he told me, what did I want to do when I grew up? And I'm like, I don't know. I still have a year to graduate. I'm not sure. So he told me about this food science program at the University of Nebraska, and that I could go visit for a four-month internship. It was paid. I think it was $1,000 a month or something like that. But it was paid, and they would find me room and board, and I could just go visit. And I said, you know, why not? So that's how I ended up in Nebraska for those 4 months, to do that internship in the food science department. And I loved it. I fell in love with it. And then after that, I continued with my master's and with my PhD. Wow.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So now for you both. So Coach, you're there. All right. And when did you guys meet, when you guys were on campus?
Well, so I'm gonna have to confess, I've lied about this story for years, but I've kind of embraced it now. But we've been on online dating, and so okay. You know, I initially was kind of like embarrassed that we did that, but now, you know, it's heck, right now I think that's how almost everybody's meeting anyway. So right. Yeah, so
that's how we're meeting.
So, yeah, right. So, well, and- yeah.
I was just going to say, we've had a couple of guests on our show that have done online dating. So yes. This is good.
I remember, I think Justin, part of the reasons I started listening to your guys' podcast because Justin Woods, great guy. So I remember him saying that as well, that he met his wife.
Yes.
We've been on Match, I think.
We're dating ourselves right now. We did not meet on Tinder or Bumble or any of the apps that you swipe left and right. Like, you actually have to fill out your profile and like click and I don't know what else. And you were matched and then you could chat with each other. And we were just talking about this morning, and Dallas was saying that our profiles were matched because we both have nerd as one of the keywords in our profile. So the first time we met each other, we chatted for a bit, and the first time we met each other in person was at a coffee shop near campus, at a nice place called the Haymarket.
The Mill in the Haymarket.
The Mill in the Haymarket. So it's kind of like an older area in town, like with restaurants and bars. It is really close to campus, and it's just really nice.
Nice. So that was the first date. That was the first official meeting right there. Okay. So it goes from there. Okay, Dallas, keep going. I love it, by the way. It's good. It's going. It's good.
Well, Becca's a lot more practical than I am, so I'm sure she's not going to say the same thing. But I had a feeling. I'm not going to sound like I'm Mr. Popular or anything, but I had a lot of girlfriends before I met Becca. And, but there was some reason when I started meeting with Becca, even before I met in person, I don't know, I had a feeling that we were going to get married. Like, I really, even the first couple conversations, like, I really was like, I don't know why, I was super confident that I was going to meet her and I was going to like her and we were going to end up getting married. It probably took her a while to feel that way, but I
You knew. I love that story, guys. That's awesome. Dallas, really quick. I know, Becca, you were going to say something, but Dallas, where were you at this point in your career?
I was doing my bachelor's at the time, and I was a political science undergrad. And at the time, I was planning on going to law school. That was really kind of what my end game was, I was going to pursue a degree in law. I realized as I was reaching the end of my bachelor's degree that that's not really what I wanted to do with my life. We were both taking classes at university. In fact, the professor who brought her to Nebraska, I took one of his undergrad classes. It was the only class I didn't do so well in. So I don't do very well in her field. Yeah.
Not many do. I don't either. So. Becca, you're a rock star with that. Science is amazing. Gosh.
Yes. Wow. So you guys met.
David. No, you know, he said that it took me a while to realize that we're going to get married, but he's failing to say that I proposed to him.
Oh, that, did you? Okay, we need to hear the story.
That's awesome. That's where we're going next. So we're dating for a while, and that was the next part of it is kind of, you and Dallas, you admit it. You're like, I'm in. I'm all in before we even met. I just felt like this is good. So, Becca, you guys start meeting and seeing each other more often. When did you both realize, okay, this is meant to be and this is really something special here?
So, at the time, we both had roommates, and there were circumstances in which our roommates kind of moved out or, you know, something happened. So, we found a place. We moved in together. We knew we clicked. We lived together for just over a year. And then PI is principal investigator, so he's my advisor while doing my PhD. He got a job in Canada, the University of Alberta, and he offered me to go with him to Alberta. So for us to do that and all the paperwork and visa requirements that required us to go to Canada, we had to be married. I told him first, what do you think about moving to Canada? And his first response was, I love Canadian football. So that was a yes. And then after that, I'm like, well, then we have to get married.
Awesome.
Great, let's do it.
This sounds like the proposal with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds. It sounds like the reverse of that, right? They got married to keep her from going to Canada. Yeah, you guys got married because you wanted to go to Canada. That's one of our favorite movies.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, great segue. So you guys you get married, things are going well, you move to Canada. So Dallas, you're experiencing Canadian football now, really for the first time up there. And so speak to a little bit of the similarities and differences in the game, because this is awesome. You're one of the few coaches that have coached abroad, right? I mean, even though it's right north of us, but it's different football. So kind of tell us a little bit about the similarities and differences that you found between both.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the same thing. You know, it's about tackling and blocking and, you know, all the life skills that we can teach these kids. You know, it's all very much fundamentally the same. And I think people would be really surprised at the talent level, like how good Canadian football, high school football is. The league that we played in, for example, I mean, just in the 3 years that I was there, there was a kid who he's a freshman and he caught touchdown passes for Clemson this year. Chuba Hubbard, who was a Heisman runner up at Oklahoma State. He was in the league that we were in as well. And then I had a kid named Albert Reese, who's at Mississippi State now. And I promise you, like in 2 years, he's going to be like a first round draft pick. I'm like, I really think so.
Let's
go. The talent level and the commitment by kids and the communities were just as good as many communities in the States, for my opinion. But the rules are a bit different. You only get three downs. The field is huge. There's, you know, the end zone is 20 yards wide.
Right.
And then the goal post on the goal line, and you can use forward motion. So you can get pretty creative. And if you have a good team and if you have good infrastructure, you can do a lot of things where you can get a lot of highlight plays or touchdowns. So for my money, I think the Canadian game, I really do. I think the Canadian game is better than the American one from an entertainment standpoint.
Nice. Well, and coach, just to say, I mean, you were there at Strathcona for 2 years, right? Just two seasons or three seasons?
3 years, yeah. So three seasons. So we lived up there in Canada for about 4 years, but yeah, I was able to coach at Scona for three.
Awesome, and did a great job. I mean, quadrupled the roster size, increased alumni playing beyond the school. You mentioned a few of those guys that have gone on. So did that, and kudos, selected as the 2016 Miles Division Coach of the Year, Senior Staff Bowl member. Wonderful. Did some awesome fundraising, according to your resume here, and just kind of built that program up in just three short years. What was it like to kind of have to say goodbye to that, when you all that time put in and the success that immediately? Oh, by the way, Coach, the last thing was, is it Terra Linda, the GPA, or was it this school that you had your first year GPA highest ever?
Terra Linda.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was at Terra Linda that we had the high GPA.
All right, I'll come back to that.
But I got a lot of the tools that I used, I took from Strathcona, because Scona is the number two AP school in Canada. So it's a very academic school. So I was just extremely lucky that I got to walk into a situation where the football program had been neglected for a long time. They hadn't won a game in a couple of years. And it was a rough couple. I mean, they hadn't played a close football game in 2 years.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's easy for me to say that I could have built the program, but really, you know, I was able just to, if I reached out to alumni and people came out, I reached out to kids came out, and we built something. And it was a lot of fun, and it was really difficult. It was extremely difficult to walk away. I still talk to kids from Scona almost every single day. It was one of the toughest things that I've ever had to probably do in my life. It was really, really tough. We wanted to stay in Canada, and a large part was because of the experience that we both had at Scona. The parents were so amazing, and the community was so amazing. People went out of their way just to say thank you to Becca all the time for just the commitment, the time commitment that our family made for the program. So it was extremely difficult. Just loved those kids so much, loved that program so much. And the coaches on the staff were some of my best friends even to today. And so it was incredibly difficult, but at the end of the day, it was definitely the right decision for us to make as a family. And so as tough as it was, yeah, no regrets about it at all.
Yeah, and Becca, your first high school experience was there, right? It kind of not into the football world until you got together with Dallas, and then when you guys moved to Canada, was that your first introduction to the game of football? And what'd you think?
it was my first football experience. So I first learned about football moving to Nebraska because it's like the thing people do and talk about.
Yes.
So I had to learn, right? I had to learn about the game so that I could, you know, be social and understand what was going on. But definitely my first experience with high school football and coaching football and going to a high school football game. And I'm pretty sure I went to all your games. Maybe I missed one if I had something really important going on, but I would go to absolutely all the games. I would sit in the booth, you know, help out if I had to help out. I would like live tweet sometimes.
That's great.
Or recorded on Periscope for his dad who wanted to watch the game. I was extremely involved just because they were just so nice, so open. The kids were incredibly respectful. Like, these are teenagers that you could have a conversation with. They were really mature, really committed. They respected Dallas. They loved him very much. So it kind of felt like our extended family.
Mm. Wow. That's awesome.
Wonderful. And so you mentioning just leaving that was just hard because, I mean, you guys were just so very involved and everything you just said rang true. So it was hard coming back. When you came back, I guess, where did you guys, did you come right back to Northern California? Is that when you came back from Alberta, or did you go somewhere before that?
Yeah, she got her job offer in Davis. A colleague that she had worked with previously had a job opening, great job opening in Davis. And then, you know, we had some issues, just the paperwork to get permanent residency in Canada, just some things synced up. She basically got a job offer the same day that we found out that our application for permanent residency in Canada was initially denied. It just kind of, these two things just kind of synced up. And so we moved to Sacramento. She knew it was really important to me that I got back into coaching and finally got to pursue an opportunity in education. I got my teaching credential at Sacramento State, and then I just got super lucky being able to, get a great job, an amazing teaching job, and get a head football coach job as well. I feel really lucky that I was able to find that opportunity in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've moved out of Sacramento. We're a little closer. We're still a little outside the Bay Area. We don't make those types of bucks. We moved a little closer to the Bay Area, and we're just living a great life out here.
Nice.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And so, Becca, that brought you back. So here we are. You are an infant gut microbial ecologist. Did I say that right? Close?
You said that right, yeah. Infant gut microbial ecologist.
There we go. Correct. Yes. And not only that, but a science communicator as well and an advocate for breastfeeding. Yes. And so just describe to us what exactly does that entail, what you do. And then if you could speak to a little bit about how, what inspired you to get into that field?
Yeah, well, my entire life I've been interested in science. I didn't know specifically what field was that I was interested in. So what I do now, I study how the bacteria that live inside the infant's tummy, inside their gut, how that develops and that how is related to their health, their immune health, and their overall health. So I work for a company that it was founded by researchers at UC Davis that were looking at different bacteria. They started studying breast milk, and this is why I'm so fascinated by breast milk. Mm-hmm. Breast milk happens to have all the nutrients that babies need, as you know, but it has also about 15% is not digestible by the baby, and it goes undigested up until the gut. And then babies need a specific bacteria that's called Bifidobacterium infantis. And if they don't have that bacteria, those nutrients are basically useless. Mm. So they need it in order to convert that into energy. So these researchers, they discovered this bacteria. And when they surveyed the babies around, they found that most babies didn't have it. So obviously that's a problem. Mm. So we need they established the company to put it back. So now we have a product that moms can go buy online, and it's a probiotic that they can give to their babies. And we also work with hospitals, making sure that all the preterm infants that are receiving breast milk in the NICU are also getting our product so that they're maximizing the benefits out of breast milk.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I'm just so fascinated by it. Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, that's amazing, because I remember giving the kids probiotics when they were little. Oh yeah. So that's amazing.
Right. And I'm fascinated by it because I think it's such an interesting relationship with nature, the baby and you know, the gut bacteria. It's almost like nature went through breast milk and through the mom is feeding the baby, but also feeding the bacteria that in turn is providing benefits to the baby. So we have amazing results, like parents just tell us how their babies change overnight from being fussy and gassy, you know, not being able to digest milk really well, to now being this happy baby. So it's just amazing to see the results right away. And, you know, you're just helping babies and helping moms. So it's, you know, just really passionate about my work.
Very great. Cool.
Very rewarding, I'm sure. I got to ask, how are you both navigating? I know you have a lot of questions, babe, so I know I'm sorry. I'm just going to cut in really quick and kind of, but I'm fascinated just from, because you guys worked, you know, you were coaching Dallas in Canada and you were doing your internship and then now you're in Davis. How did you guys navigate your time? Because you are a scientist, you are working, Becca, and Dallas, you're a head coach teaching. How do you guys navigate your time together in your home? And then now you have Alice too, who's 2 years old. So we've got a busy toddler too. I just think, you know, it's just amazing. It always fascinates me when people have these careers and they're able to be a head coach and then the wife has a career and just to juggle all that is amazing. So can you please just kind of speak into that a little bit and how you navigate your time? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you can, you know, chime in when you want. But I think we've always been really good at providing space to the other one and also try to be involved. So I went to all of his games. I was involved in all of the fundraising, everything that had to do with football. And he was, you know, he moved to Canada so that I could pursue my PhD. So I've always been conscious of that, you know, like that was a career move for me that he was supportive of. So I think I was really lucky that he found something that he was also passionate about while we were in Canada, because it took a couple of bumps to get there. Like when we first got to Canada, he couldn't find the job that he wanted. And so, you know, I wouldn't say that our relationship got shaky, but it was, you know, we weren't necessarily bringing our best selves just because he was frustrated with that situation. Now that we have a baby, we do our best to establish an early bedtime so that we, which is not necessarily, we try to do that. It's not working, you know, the last couple months, but we had, you know, a 7 p.m. bedtime that would give us enough time to take Cookie or dog on a walk, talk about our days, you know, watch a movie, still come home and go to bed early. And over the weekends, we try to divide the day, you know, who is mainly responsible for Alice, you know, the mornings or the afternoons, so that the other one has time to, you know, do whatever they want, you know, with their time, so that it doesn't feel overwhelming. So I think we're just really good at being there for each other, but also providing space. For each other.
Outstanding, because there's no village, right? There's no family. There's just you guys, and then developing that community, coach, with you and just your families that you guys get involved with, right?
Mm-hmm. I definitely think I get the long end of the stick on this one. Becca never talks about this or brags about it, but I mean the reality is that she's the breadwinner of the family, and so she's the breadwinner, but also, I mean, she'll never say this, but I mean, she pulls probably more of her weight than I do on a lot of days. Mm. But You know, like you said, we have really great communication about how to divide up responsibilities in our house and allowing that other person to have some free time if they want to go do something. And like she was talking about, when we went through Canada, our first year there was really difficult. We were brand new to this country, and Canada is extremely expensive. It's more expensive than California to live in, which is hard to imagine, I know. Jeez. But, we were living in a basement apartment for a year and just trying to get by and survive. Wow. And so, I mean, you know, the old expression, right? So it doesn't kill you, it's going to make you stronger. And you know, yes. We went through that together and we survived it. And we're living a great life right now. So.
Awesome. Dallas, what a... just say thank you. I want to pivot back to you. Thank you for your service. Our listeners need to know that you served our country for 7 years, I believe, right? In the Army?
Yeah, it's about 7 years. I joined the Army Reserve when I was 17. So on my 17th birthday, I got my parents' permission, so I joined the Army. I kind of balanced that in school for a few years, and then I got deployed to Afghanistan. So I was in Afghanistan from 08 to the end of 09. I served in the Helmand province during that time. And so definitely a really interesting experience for sure. It's so tough for me. I've been thinking about this because you said the questions in advance, and I've been thinking about this one, like, what could I share? And it's like, it almost feels like another lifetime ago. It feels like a million years ago. So it's almost so hard to think about. But yeah, it was definitely, you know, some of the best friends I ever made in my life during that time. It was definitely an experience for sure. So yeah.
Good. Wow. Is there any part of that the operation Enduring Freedom? Are you allowed to speak to any of that? Yeah. Classified, declassified. We don't want to get you in trouble, but you know, just
curious. They're never going to write a book about. They're never going to write a book or make a movie about me. I was far from being John Rambo, but but you know, it was definitely. I mean, it was a combat area. You know, it was the deadliest year in the war in the deadliest place. We knew people who passed away, unfortunately lost their lives, and so I mean it's just the reality of it. It was an experience. I learned a lot from being in the military, and you know, I wish I would say some positive things, but I learned more about bad leadership than I did good leadership. And so a lot of the things that I learned there I've definitely carried over into coaching and learning how to work with people and being empathetic and sympathetic with people. And just organizing good teams and trying to make people feel involved and feel good about their contributions on the team. So learned a lot of life lessons and met a lot of amazing people, that's for sure. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And then after 2012, I guess being in the Army for that long, so what's the process for a vet to kind of, you know, how we could say we hang up our cleats, right? We're done playing. How did you kind of come to the point where it was like, I've served my country, I've done my time, I'm moving on. How did that come about?
I got injured when I was overseas. So again, no great story. I just injured my back from wearing, you know, so we did like escort security missions. So I was constantly wearing like all my bulletproof vest and my stuff like that. And just, I got into some car accidents when I was there as well, crashed a truck a few times. And so, my back was just really messed up afterwards. I realized I could no longer do any of the fun stuff that's included in the Army. And so once that was kind of out the window, I realized my time was kind of up. And so I was really glad to do it, you know. It was something that I always wanted to do my entire life, and I always thought maybe I'd have a full career in it. Mm. But definitely when I came home, I was definitely kind of clock watching. I was counting the days for sure when I got home to being a free man, and especially so I could grow my beard out.
Well, what kind of specialty training did you have to be part of that security detail? What were some of the things that you had to train on and be very, very good at to be part of those missions?
Gosh, you know, I wish I could tell you that I a lot of cool and cool things, and I was a Deadeye, a shooter, or all these other things. But honestly, they just give you a rifle and they put you in a truck and they say drive this to point A to point B. And this guy's got the gun, yeah. And this guy's going to be your navigator. And good luck, kid. So that's the special training that I received while I was in the Army. Was pretty much figure it out. But I mean, it was pretty cool. The whole basic training experience and getting to those things were definitely really neat, and then, when you have friends, it becomes even cooler because, the experiences, whatever you're doing, if you're out in the woods in a tent for, 2 weeks or whatever it is, it might be tough, but you're experiencing it with someone who's really close to you. And so, it creates fond memories looking back. And those are some of the biggest things that I think about is just, even when times were tough, how we could kind of laugh about it. I met some incredible people because, as you imagine, there's a lot of stressful times when you're in the military. It can be really difficult. And, when you have that relationship with other people, you're able to get each other through. And a lot of those, kind of team lessons are things that I've tried to carry over into football and make applicable.
That's great.
And everything you just said, I was thinking freshman football the whole time. Just toss them in and let them go to work and figure it out on the way. Best friends, relationship. I mean, everything you just said. We could talk to our lower levels about that. But no, I appreciate that. And Dallas, again, I don't want to make light of this. I do thank you for serving our country. Anytime I meet a serviceman, whether it be a veteran or a current serviceman, I just thank you putting your life out there and serving our country so that we can sit here and talk openly and freely about our passions, right? Mm-hmm. Being a scientist or a football coach. And thank you. Thank you for doing that. Appreciate that.
Appreciate that.
Let's go. Let's take you right back up to current status. Now we're at Terra Linda. And that, so going back to, getting this job, you brought the football team to its highest recorded GPA level in just your first year. And you just described it recently about Alberta, Canada, and just kind of how they incorporate a lot of that into academics, into their athletics. So what are some of those techniques that you used to accomplish that in your first year at Terra Linda?
Well, I think, one of the biggest things is, you just have to set your priorities straight with your kids for sure. You have to emphasize right there from the beginning is that you're a student athlete, not an athlete student. And I think every coach in America has probably advertised that cliche a number of times. But some of the things Skona did really well is, they would use posters or whatever communication that they would use. And we do this. We put a poster up in our locker room. The poster is not talking about this is what you need to graduate from high school. This poster is talking about this is what you need to do if you want to go to college. And so we try to set the expectations of, if you want to get into college, this is what you need to be doing. So we're setting kind of a high bar, high example for those kids. Like a lot of good ideas, I stole the ones that I have. I took them all from Skona because they had a great infrastructure in place. That school did a wonderful job of prioritizing academics over athletics, but nice. But they did a wonderful job, and so that was definitely a primary thing. Waivers are very common. A lot of kids felt that they could just probably rely on waivers, especially their senior year. And so for me, one of the biggest things that I talk about and I emphasize as kids, and I stress it to them right away, I stress it to parents, is that I'm not really a big believer in using the waivers. For me, I understand that they have that kind of way out, but I tell them from the get-go, your grades need to be in order. So for a lot of kids, I'm helping kids get into summer school over the summer. So if they didn't end their last semester quite so well and they're going to enter the new school year as academically ineligible, we got to find ways to enroll them in summer school and get their grades up and get their credits on pace, get them on pace to graduate, improve their GPA. So, at the end of the day, it's always on the kids, of course, right? They're the ones that do the work. But just that constant line of communication about what the standard is, what they need to prioritize as well. If I have a kid who's not doing very well in school, I'm going to tell them, listen, you're not going to come to practice. You're not going to play in the game. I don't care if you are my starting whatever. I don't care how good you are. if you're not making the grade, if you're skipping classes, you're not going to play. And so I think, in that regard, some of that drawing that hard line, prioritizing the right things, I think just being vocal about where the priorities are, I think has a big influence on kids. And so if the kids really want to play, and if they love playing the game, and if you prioritize that and you say, hey, listen, my goal is not to, nobody's going to care if I go 10-0. It's not what I'm shooting for. I'm not shooting to go 10-0. Well, I mean, I am, but right, the most important thing is that, you need to be able to graduate and be on pace to do something successful with your life. And so, the one thing I really love about the coaching staff, we have at Terlinda, we do a really great job, in my opinion, of trying to emphasize those things and helping kids put their priorities in the right place.
Outstanding. And I know you've been there just a short time, but Becca, have you been able to kind of dive in like you did in Canada with his teams or anything? You've gotten to know the parents, any of the kids? Like, how have you adjusted to the Terlinda life now?
Yeah, no, unfortunately, no. I haven't. And it's one of the things that I tell Dallas that I miss about our time in Canada, how much involvement I was able to have. I've only been able to go to one of his games. One is because, we have our daughter and she was just little and, just bringing her to the game was just crazy in itself. And
yes.
The other is just because it's far, right? Like for us, like in Canada, all the games were within, maybe 15 minutes from our, mm-hmm. where we lived. While here I would have to, which is not absolutely crazy, but a couple hours driving with a baby or a toddler is probably not my favorite thing to do. So unfortunately, I haven't been able, but I'm looking forward. It looks like he's going to have a couple Saturday games so we can find a babysitter. I'll go to some of his games.
Wonderful. Yeah. Good.
Yeah. I missed that. How far away do you live from the school? Did I miss?
I live about 50 miles from the school that I work at. So I have to commute into the Bay Area every day. So last year before COVID hit, so it was usually like I would probably get up at 5, get to the, it'd probably take, because of traffic, there's tons of traffic getting into the Bay Area on any day. But probably leaving at 5, getting into the weight room at 6:30, opening up the weight room for an hour, teach till 3, football till 7, and then, hour to 90 minute commute, sometimes 2 hour commute back home if there's lots of traffic. So that's why I always say, the biggest thing for us is like, she'll always try to make it sound like it's fair and that we have a 50-50 split, but she definitely, at the end of the day, especially during football season, she's almost like a single mom.
Yeah.
Because I'm almost kind of like a ghost, it's a big sacrifice, but as I know, coach, it's if you're passionate about it and you love it, it's worth it, right?
Yeah.
And you find a woman who appreciates that. And it just, what you guys were saying earlier about respecting each other's passions and supporting each other. I hope our young couples out there are just starting out, our head coaches who are just starting out and their wives, I hope they're getting that. I think that's very important. Because you're right, Coach. I couldn't do it without her support and her being all in, as well as you as well, and without Becca being all in. It just, there's too much time invested in what we do and who we do it with, right? Kids, they need that. They need that time invested, not just the practice time, but all the other stuff that comes with that. And that's neat. I mean, especially the travel time. And when you said that, it just brought me back. I was at a school, I had to travel, and it was probably about an hour and 15 minutes as well. And I just remember those long days where I would put my kids to bed on Sunday night, and they were probably 4 at the time.
Yeah, when I was at Monrovia. I think were in preschool, so they were about
four or 5 years old. I'd put them to bed on Sunday night, and then I'd be up early, 4:30, out the door, practice, right? And then Monday night,
he did like a Monday night
kind of a football fellowship with the guys, watch Monday Night Football at a house and have some dinner and just off the field stuff and just have some fun. But come home, the kids would already be in bed, get up early, wouldn't see them out Tuesday. And if I had a booster meeting on Tuesday nights, we're usually Tuesday nights, they're in bed, come home, I'd kiss them, I'd leave Wednesday morning, I wouldn't see my kids until Wednesday night after practice. And I was like,
crazy.
We need to call a timeout here. It's just, it was too hard. So those were I loved it. Loved the school. She was on board. She knew it was going to be long and hard. I just couldn't figure, after 2 years of that, I was missing my kids.
Well, you know, he got into a car accident on the way home from one of the Monday Night Fellowships.
Yeah.
And it was his second year at that school. And I think that kind of spearheaded his thoughts into, okay, something's got to change. Either we need to move out there, closer, or may potentially need to leave this job and get something closer, because it was the craziest thing. He got into a car accident. He was actually on Bluetooth, so he wasn't on his phone, like he was hands-free, but he was talking to a parent. And that parent, I found out he got into a car accident because the parent, the gentleman, the dad that he was talking to, the wife private messaged me on Facebook and said, I don't mean to alarm you, but my husband was talking to your husband and he was gone to a car accident and hurt. So he heard the whole thing. Like, Chris, he was on the freeway, tumbled a couple of times, right?
He didn't tumble. Flipped over.
Oh, and flipped and skid. Yeah. So he landed, you're upside down. I mean, you got out of the car and the paramedics looked at him over and said, I think he had like a scratch on one of his finger. And that was it. And the paramedics looked at him and said, you need to go to the hospital, sir, because you should not be walking right now. You know, that's how crazy. I mean, it was a total loss. The car was totaled. But yeah, it was the craziest. And that kind of started getting us thinking, okay, something's got to change and that was kind of my biggest fear, was him driving late at night on the freeway. And we know, we're both living in California, traffic's crazy. Highways are crazy here in California. And that kind of got us rolling and thinking, okay, something's got to change. But it was so expensive there at Monrovia. It was like, so we couldn't afford, you know, we were single income, you know how that is in California. So I feel you on that, you know, and Becca, that's amazing, you know, because you've got your career too. You know, I was staying at home, so there was a little bit relief for me, but for you to be a working mom and for, you know, Dallas to be working an hour and a half away, that's amazing.
What is your schedule, Becca? Take us through your day and schedule.
I work the normal, you know, 8 to 4, 9 to 5. I'm lucky that I have a flexible schedule. Like, I can work from home. Well, especially now with COVID, but I can work from home if I don't have any lab work. I can take off if I need to. You know, if something happens with Alice, I can take off early. Work is really understandable, really family friendly. I've always felt really supported, as a mom at my workplace, especially because, you know, we're a company that works for mom and baby. So, I'm lucky in that regard. And I'm also, yes, he's gone long days on the fall, but I think I also get the happiness that he's getting out of it. So he brings his best self. And when he's not coaching football and when he's not 100% involved in it, then just he is not the person that I love, because he's just somewhere else. So I'm happy to take that sacrifice as long as he's doing what he's passionate about.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
that's a team. Yeah. You guys are a team, and that's what it's all about. We always ask a couple of signature questions, but I feel like you guys really answered them. So I'm just going to kind of rephrase the question. We always typically ask, what are three aspects that contribute to a successful football marriage? And I feel like both of you have kind of answered and spoken to that a little bit. So I'm just going to ask you, what is one that you feel overall that has really helped you to be a successful football couple, and how you get through the goods, the bads, the uglies, right? The bliss and the blisters of football, marital bliss.
I think the biggest thing is we're just kind of proud of each other. Like, we just feel invested in each other. I've always just been, I brag about her all the time, It probably annoys people. I'm sure I sound almost really vain, but I just think my wife is the best wife ever. And I just think she's incredible. And every accomplishment that she has, I feel like it's one of my accomplishments, and I know that she feels the same way. Whenever I have an accomplishment, she feels like she's invested in that, and she feels like she gets a piece of that as well. So I think, you know, a big part of it is we're just invested in each other, and we're proud of each other when we make accomplishments and we do good things. So from my end, I think that that's definitely a big part of it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, you know, and I would totally agree. And I think just, you know, just supporting each other through our passions, and just living through, like, living through each other, you know, like I feel his happiness and the passion that he gets, you know, through football. And he also, you know, he listens to me, even though sometimes, you know, I might be too jargony when I speak about my science, but he, you know, he listens and he tries to be passionate about, and, you know, I think just that commitment is definitely what's super important for us. And absolutely, yeah, I'm just super proud of him, and I feel that he's proud of me too, so.
Wonderful.
Great.
That's great.
Coach,
yeah.
Same thing. You do such a great job with academics, and that might be one of your vital things for a successful program. But go ahead and speak to your program now, and same kind of question. What do you think are maybe your top three things that you need to have a successful program?
I mean, I could probably talk about some attributes or characteristics for sure, but if I'm going to say like really tangible things, is that I think the first thing you need is you have to have good assistant coaches. If you cannot do it by yourself, it's always we. So, you know, it's always about trying to create a family environment with the coaches where you feel like you're a family, you have that kind of brotherhood, and you know that you can count on a guy to do his job, and he's got his right, he's kind of got his values are in place with yours. And so I think that that's crucial. And I've always been a big believer, you know, it's always great to win games and it's always great to win championships. But like, you know, I always tell kids, like when you look back, it's always about the memories that you have and the relationships. And so, you know, you have to set goals about being successful. You can go 0-10 and be successful. You can go 10-0 and win a championship and be unsuccessful if you don't do it the right way. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big part about it. And then just having, you know, having love for every kid, you know, even if he's not very good, even if he's not a great football player, having love for him and finding ways to make them feel involved and part of a team, and create an environment for them to feel proud of themselves, that they get better and be part of something. So I think if you can find good coaches, and they're all, and they kind of have a good value system where it's about the kids and it's not about their own self-esteem, then I think that that's probably one of the more crucial things for sure.
Awesome.
Good.
Yeah,
thank
that's
you.
Good. I got to ask really quick, Coach, I know we're running out of time here.
We're off script.
Yeah, we're off
totally
script. I'm
off
sorry.
Script, Coach. We're just calling plays now. Well, we're shooting.
Well, when we looked at your resumes and like really kind of dove into them, I'm like, oh my gosh, we have so much to ask. But I wanted to ask, Coach, maybe there's like two things that you would recommend any football coach to do to help raise money. Because I think that is something that a lot of coaches mm-hmm. struggle with, is raising money, because we all know there's not a lot of funding through districts unless you've got a private school, right? So what are your two mm-hmm. like main go-tos to raise money for your football program?
Well, it was a lot easier in Canada because they were a little bit more liberal about alcohol sales and using alcohol sales to fundraise. So I don't think I can get away with that here, but that was a really big one. We'd have a raffle or a liquor basket for sure. But that was a big one. And I find, though, is that the best events you're going to have is you can bring families together. If you can do something where, you know, this was back at Scona, but we would have a pub night. Again, I'm heavily reliant on alcohol, I guess. But we would have a pub night, and that would raise a lot of money. And it would raffle off a liquor basket. That was always great. At Terra Linda, it's definitely been different. And so at Terra Linda, for us to be able to raise money, it's definitely putting more on the kids, finding something for them to do to feel involved. And then, you know, absolutely making sure that kid that goes out and raises a bunch of money, making sure that they get acknowledged for it. So, you know, at Terra Linda, the two biggest students that I have, the two biggest people part of the program that have raised the most money, was one, our team manager. She raised, like, she would raise us over $1,000 very easily. And then we had a another student. He is, I'm trying to think of the right way to put this, but he is, he's autistic, but he loves the team and he wants to do everything he can. And so that's his best way. He knows that's his best way of raising money. He feels really involved. And when you're able to acknowledge him for his accomplishments, for what he's able to do, and make him feel important and make him feel recognized and show, you know, the appreciation and making everybody know how thankful we are for them to go out and do that. I think that that's really important. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cause I know that's such a struggle. I mean, even Chris, yeah. And I think there's some schools where you get, they're more motivated to raise money than others. And so you always struggle with that. It's a hard one. And I think part of it is just kids in general, you know, and there's just so much, there's too much to do and they don't have time to do it or just don't have the motivation. But yeah, I always feel like that's kind of a struggle. So any tips or tricks?
Yeah. Kudos to you. Really. Yeah. I mean, awesome. And way to tap into the resources that you had in Canada. and trying to apply it down here, but yeah, no, that's great. Well, guys, wanted to thank you so much. We're going to wrap up our time. You guys have amazing stories as individuals, but a tremendous and a most amazing story as a couple. We're so thankful that you got to come on and just share with us a little piece of your lives, a big piece of your lives, actually. But thank you. Thank you for your transparency, your hearts, your honesty. And Becca, all the best as you go forward and continue to develop those wonderful things for our babies. And Coach, all the best in this season. We want to thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much for having us. Fun.
Thank you for having us. Really, really appreciate it. I hope you have a great season. And, you know, with all the parallels we have in our lives, I hope you don't mind if I ever reach out with a few questions or tips for advice from you, Coach.
Oh, I'd love it. Anytime, Dallas. Yeah. Would love that. We just love to keep that relationship going.
Yeah.
Just like the importance of having a relationship with our coaches and athletes. We feel like you're part of our family now. You're part of the Friday Night Life family. This is just our first year of doing this, and we celebrate 1 year of this in May. So we have so many couples to thank, and now you guys, just thank you for reaching out and just taking some time with us tonight.